everyone! Today we have a very special episode with Walker Scobell. We'll be deep diving into the books and into the show, so stick around. But first, spoiler warning. If you haven't read Trials of Apollo, you're safe, but if you haven't read Heroes of Olympus or finished the Percy Jackson and the Olympian series, we will be talking about both of those series in this episode. Also, two quick notes. One, after this episode, we're going to be taking a quick break, and then we'll be back with more interviews. And we will keep you updated on what the schedule is there on all of our social media. Also, please forgive the fact that we get something slightly wrong about a scene in the Titan's Curse in this episode. It ended up inspiring a really interesting conversation about Thalia, so it's worth it. Okay, that's all from me. Enjoy the episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Monster Donut, a literary and historical deep dive into the Percy Jackson series and all of its following spin-offs. I'm Emily, a classic scholar-ish.
And I'm Phoebe, a dramaturg and story consultant. And today we are joined by none other than Walker Scobell, Percy Jackson, in the Percy Jackson and the Olympians TV series. Hi, Walker. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
First off, huge congrats on the season 2 renewal.
Thank you so much.
I know I can speak for both Phoebe and I that we are so, so thrilled with what you've done with Percy as a character. And we just cannot wait to see that continue to build throughout this season upcoming and hopefully many more. There's so many iconic scenes in Sea of Monsters 2. So our first question is, which of those are you most looking forward to seeing adapted?
I think the chariot races are going to be pretty cool. Because we haven't really done... I mean, we did capture the flag, but, like, we haven't really spent a lot of time in Camp Half-Blood. I was there for a sec, and then I was there at the end, but I was just kind of in and out, you know? So I think we'll probably spend a little bit more time on that next season, just looking at the book and all the chariot races and the fight on Half-Blood Hill with, like, the mechanical bulls and stuff. So that should be pretty fun.
Can't wait to see Annabeth and Percy working together, building that chariot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Tyson at the end, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I see you've got a shield behind you, too. Is that...
This is my Percy Jackson and, I guess, like, all movies shelf. I have that. I have the Capture the Flag shield right there. That's the real metal Riptide. That right there, the Sea of Monsters is missing from it right now. But if you can see the original covers right there. Yeah. Not the original, but, like, those are my first set of Percy Jackson books that I ever got. I still have them.
Oh, man. That's so special. I always love having the books. They're at, like, the first copy I read just in my hand.
Yeah, my first copy of The Lightning Thief is literally just loose pages in a bag right now. I've read it so many times.
My mom's first copy, because she was reading it the same time I was. While we were on set, they have these giant pipes. Or not pipes, like fire hoses. Because if it's supposed to be, like, have just have rained or something, they will, like, spray it down with the fire hoses and stuff, like the whole set. And we were filming outside, and there was a hole in the fire hose, and it just sprayed directly into, like, the tent that we were staying in, and it completely soaked her purse and her book. So it's, like, really
you know, it fits, though. It makes sense. It does. For that book.
Like, this is my water damaged copy from Percy Jackson.
Yeah, damaged from Percy Jackson's set water. It's a pretty good sword.
Yeah. You know what scene I am looking forward to in Sea of Monsters, or at least what I'm curious what they'll do with it, the writer's room, is in the Circe scene right before Percy gets turned into a guinea pig, when she tempts him to drink the potion.
And he, like, sees his reflection.
Yeah, because I feel like most stories like that, you know, you expect the hero to, like, maybe feel tempted, but, you know, break through it or be stopped at the last minute. But, like, no, Percy looks at the more confident version of himself and actually drinks from it. And I've always just found that scene fascinating. I'm so excited to see what they do with that.
Honestly, me too. I keep, like, trying to, I talk to Aryan and, like, Leah about this all the time. We always, like, they won't give us any of the episodes yet. I mean, I don't know if they're written, but, so we keep trying to make our own. I mean, we're not writing them, but, like, we sketch them out and, like, change some stuff for the show or like, guess what they might change later on. And so we have, like, all of the episodes and what we think is going to happen for all of them. All sketched out already. So we're just waiting.
Did you do that at all before season 1?
I don't think so. I mean, it's like they don't really like to give out the scripts until they're, like, finished, you know, until, like, we, like, actually know what we're going to be saying, and then they don't change anything, because sometimes they, like, even, like, last second, they'll just take out scenes and add a big scene and just switch things out, and, like, it'll change the whole story. But I remember while we were filming, I used to go into the, because where the volume is and where we do our school in that office building, that's where all of like a bunch of writers are and all the offices are. So I used to go in and talk to people and just like take a copy of an unfinished script and read it.
Ooh, I don't know if this is a question you can answer. Was there anything you were like, oh man, I wish that had made the cut?
I don't think there was anything like that big. Actually, no, there was that one scene that Aryan did. I never got to see it. He showed me like a clip of it, but it was a scene with like the Council of Cloven Elders, and it looked amazing. It was on the volume stage. They had like a bunch of people dressed up as satyrs bleeding and stuff. I never got to see it. Again, I saw a little clip of it, but it looked awesome. So I'm pretty sad they removed that, but
it's fine. We'll see them in the future.
We will. We'll see it eventually.
And we'll get the extended cut too.
I know. I hope we get a blooper reel at some point. Because I know that there's a lot of bloopers.
Were there any ones you remember that you're like, I really need that in my life, just on a video?
Well, I already posted one, I think. There's two. There was one where it was a scene with Aryan, and he was getting dragged down into Tartarus. And I run, and I jump, and I land on him, and I grab onto him. Like, right before that, they kept telling me, like, make sure not to kick sand in his face. And so while we were rehearsing it, I didn't realize how easy it was to do that. And so I kicked sand in his face.
Oh,
but
no.
The first like time I actually attempted to do that, like on camera, I sprinted and I jumped and I landed like right on Aryan's head and I just rolled over him and he like sat up and like a bunch of sand came pouring out of his mouth. So I really hope we get to see more of that someday. But yeah, also there's a scene, the way beginning in the Minotaur fight where I was ripping off the horn and I was stabbing it and it was more of like a close-up shot. I don't think they ended up using that shot, but I was like exhausted. It was like the last shot of the day. And it was pouring rain. Everyone was cold. We were all ready to go home. I think it was like the last day of the Minotaur fight. And they put this snap thing in the horn and then they attached it to like the blue screen Minotaur. And I actually had to snap it off. And on one take, I pulled it and I just like hit myself really hard in the forehead. So I hope that we get to see that one too one day.
Mm-hmm. The mishaps of being a hero, you know?
Yeah, a lot can go wrong.
You know, something that we've talked a bit about just while watching the show, but also we just talked about it with Daphne Olive from the writer's room in our last episode with her.
Oh my God, yeah. I love her. She's his best.
Yeah, we love Daphne. But something that we talked about with her was how complicated of a character Percy can be sometimes. Like, I remember when the casting call first went out for Percy, I found it so funny just how many character traits were listed for him. Because it was like, well, he's quick to anger, he's impulsive, he's affectionate, he's smart, he's quick-witted. Like, it just went on and on and on. And I'm just so impressed by your ability to capture every side of him, because that's not at all an easy thing to play. I'd love to hear about actually stepping into Percy generally, but also, were there any favorite aspects of Percy's personality that you really loved getting to dig into?
First of all, thank you so much. That means a lot, especially coming from like fans of the book. It's like, that's my favorite thing. I like to talk to people about that. If there's like, the other day I saw a kid walking in the hallway and she was holding like a Trials of Apollo book. And I said, I liked your book. And then we talked about it for like 2 minutes. And it's just like the best. It's the best feeling ever. But I think what's interesting about Percy is that like he's kind of like double-edged, if that makes any sense. Like every trait that he has another one that like directly goes against that. You know what I mean? Like it's an interesting thing to play. That also plays into the ADHD part of him. And I think having Rick in the writer's room definitely helps with that a lot, because like even just reading the script, I know that like that's Percy. And also just having read the book so many times, I knew how I was gonna play him, and yeah.
You've definitely captured him.
Thank you.
Just to like dig into Percy a little bit further, I wanna touch on Percy's anger. Because I feel like that is a huge staple of his character in the books, like that wrath that comes out. If you push him the wrong way. And I totally see that, especially when he's confronting, well, I mean, it's obvious in the Ares scene, but I was also like shocked, blown away by when he was talking to Zeus at the end of the season. Like he actually starts saying things that like no one has dared to ever say to Zeus, like ever in the books. Very exciting to watch for me personally.
It is. I love that part of him personally. It's like, I see like TikTok videos about it all the time and stuff like that. It's funny to think about, because the books are from his point of view. I mean, at least the first five. So you don't really think about how terrifying he must be to other people sometimes. Like I remember in like book 4, when Rachel Elizabeth there drew that photo of him and he sees it in his dream. Yeah. Of like him and like this like crazy look on his face. It's funny that like he just doesn't realize that he's doing that. You know what I mean? It's like subconscious. It's like there, you know? It's a part of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that moment. I have drawn that moment myself. I love that moment.
Me too. Yeah. I also hope he gets to do some of the Heroes of Olympus books because I think that'll be awesome, especially because I think you get to see a little bit more of that too, especially in Tartarus.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I love those Tartarus scenes.
Me too. I was talking to Aryan about them the other day.
So were we. We were just talking about them.
I mean, yeah. They're amazing. I can't wait. I mean, I really hope we get... I never know what to say. You know what I mean?
I know. Like,
I don't want to make it seem like I'm confirming stuff. Like, I talk as if I know what's going to happen, even though I don't. But if we do get to do Heroes of Olympus and stuff like that, I always think about how fun it will be to have Jason and all these other characters join the show. And even like next season, Tyson, I always think about like all the new castmates and like the new friends that we're going to make on set and stuff. It's going to be pretty awesome.
I mean, I can't wait to see Tyson. Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. And Nico. Nico and Bianca.
Yes. You know who I'm excited to see? Ethan Nakamura.
Ethan Nakamura. All right. I always think about that scene on the bridge. When Annabeth jumps in front of him.
So good. That might be my favorite scene in all of the books. I love that scene.
I wonder if we get there, what we're going to do with that. You know what I mean? It's stuff like that. Stuff like those scenes. I just wonder, you know? Like, how are we going to make that happen?
Well, I mean, you've got some very talented visual effects people.
Mm-hmm. We do. Yeah.
I personally would love to see Percy just single-handedly break a bridge.
Oh, yeah, and doesn't he kill, like, 200 monsters beforehand, too? Yeah.
Sticks his sword in the ground at the bridge.
Yeah. That was something I think we talked about, going back to, like, how terrifying Percy is, where I was like, none of these kids know what just happened in the underworld. None of them know that Percy has the Curse of Achilles. They just saw him do that.
Exactly, and I imagine, like, what kids were thinking. You know, because, I mean, demigods aren't that old. They're, like, what, 12 to, like, 17 or 18?
Yeah.
So, like, there's a bunch of 12-year-old kids watching Percy get, like, with a Hyperion fight, you know, when he gets, like, blasted back, like, 30 feet into, like, a concrete wall or whatever. What do they think? They don't know that he has the Achilles curse. You know what I mean? Like, they don't, he's just a normal dude to them. How did he get back up so easily?
That's one of my favorite parts of Heroes of Olympus, is getting everyone else's Percy reactions, just because it's sort of, like, those are the moments you start to realize, like, oh, wait a minute. And you get that with Jason, too, in Lost Hero, where, like, he kind of comes into his power, and everyone's like, wait, who is this guy? Hold on.
Yeah, it's almost like you are the outsider watching, you know.
Exactly. I wonder what that's going to be like. I don't know. I don't know why I'm so... It's, like, weird. I haven't talked about Percy Jackson in, like, 6 months, you know? Like, I haven't really talked about Percy Jackson in so long. It's like my mind keeps getting flooded with things to say, and when I'm halfway through like saying one thing, I think of another thing that's also awesome. I mean a lot of the time I'm interviewed as like what we've done, you know. They don't really ask me what we're gonna do, you know. Like they talk about the past, they don't talk about what's gonna happen in the future, and so it's such an interesting thing to think about. You know.
Well, we will be asking plenty more questions about the future. But I am curious, you know, since we don't have the narration in the show, like we do in the book, and Percy's narration is such a, like, massive part of the series, as a book fan, as a book reader, since you've read it so many times, do you have Percy's voice in your head, like, while you're playing out some of the scenes?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Sometimes I'll go back and... like the Tunnel of Love stuff and all those scenes, I'll go back and just read what he's thinking about that, you know, and just think about that while I'm doing the scene, you know? Yeah, that's a good question. I kind of like that they don't have the narration. I think it works for the show. I don't know. It'd be cool if we did a season where I'm like narrating the whole time, like you, like Joe Goldberg.
Yeah.
Really close to the microphone.
It's like the alternate cut of Blade Runner, right? Where they had one where Harrison Ford narrated the whole thing and one where they cut it all.
Oh, I didn't know they did that.
I think they were originally going to have a narration, I think, for the whole movie. And I think I remember reading Harrison Ford was like, no, I feel like it's a better movie if we just show everything instead of having him explain it.
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that there isn't narration in the show. Like, I like that you just kind of intro it at the beginning and then do the little, like, reverse on the intro at the end.
I like the intro to the show, though. The narration there. I hope we do that for every season and, like, the end of every season.
Oh. Yeah, because, cool. I mean, the start of every Percy Jackson book is so iconic.
It is. They are, yeah. And also, it's such a good way to, like, I mean, it's great for the book fans and it's great for the non-book fans, you know, the narration, because it kind of gets all of the exposition, like, out of the way. You know what I mean? It gets everything that's happened in between seasons. Mm. Like, it kind of explains it all. And also, like, as a book reader, I love the narration at the beginning because I think it's, like, I don't know. I just feel like Percy Jackson when I'm doing it, you know? It's cool.
That's interesting as well, because I feel like that makes sense to me, since I think in the books it's pretty well established that, like, at some point Percy's writing this as his story.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way. I mean, it's always, like, implied that it's like a Percy from the future, but he talks in like present tense, you know? But yeah, maybe like at the end of his new Percy Jackson series, of Rick's new series, maybe it'll end with, like, him, like, putting a pencil down and finishing it, and, like, the whole thing was just a story. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I think he does mention in Chalice of the Gods, he says, like, he made a typo or something. I was like, a typo? You're typing this?
Maybe the whole thing's a college essay for Chalice of the Gods.
Oh. Ah, there you go.
See, that's great. I love that. Well, something else that we've seen a lot as book fans coming into the series is a lot of sort of small changes to a lot of the events of the show, even some, like, little moments here and there. There's a few that we cannot stop thinking about, a huge one being the sword fight between Percy and Luke in episode 8. But we were wondering if you had a favorite change that you, when you were first reading the scripts, maybe you were like, oh, this is good.
Huh. Sometimes it's hard to remember what's the show and what's the book.
Yeah.
It's hard to, like, separate that because, like, you're reading one thing and then you, like, film another thing. But I think back to that Luke thing, I kind of liked how they added the fight. I mean, the scorpion thing was cool, but I think it's, like, it's so much cooler that Luke tries to, like, recruit him. And that's going to mess with Percy, I think, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
Which will make it even harder for him because, I mean, at least in the show, I know it's, like, a mixed topic for the books, but I don't think that Percy and Luke aren't friends. I think they are friends. They have a lot in common. And I think the hardest part about Luke betraying him was that, like, Percy believes him. You know, he agrees with him. Uh-huh. And I think, like, as we go throughout the seasons, it's going to be harder and harder for Percy to not join his side, you know?
Mm. Right, like, the longer you're kind of used by the gods, the more you're like, exactly. This guy has a point. Like, exactly. I think all the time about in Heroes of Olympus, that one moment in Mark of Athena where he's like, Bacchus shows up and is just watching them fight instead of helping them, and he's like, I totally understand where Luke was coming from, actually. Like, he has that thought.
I need to reread Heroes of Olympus. I feel like I remember all the big parts, but I do not. I don't know. It's been a while since I read them. You just reminded me. I need to reread them soon.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot happens in those books. There's a lot in there. Those are some big boys.
No, I didn't remember that happened until we just reread it recently. And I was like, wait.
Yeah. And also, I mean, again, for the future, I wonder what they're going to do with, like, Camp Jupiter. You know, yeah. SPQR. That's going to be weird. I don't know. Uh-huh. I feel like, I mean, it's going to be cool. And also, like, the ultimate personalities of the gods. That's going to be sick. Yeah. So much stuff down the road.
You know, one small change that is a favorite of mine was in episode 3, when Grover and Annabeth are both asking Percy what he's so afraid of, and Percy finally admits that he's afraid that one of them is going to betray him and that he, like, feels totally alone. I loved that because we had talked about, like, I didn't realize until we reread the books for the podcast that Percy really doesn't share how he's feeling with the people around him very often. He's very interior. Yeah. And so just seeing Grover kind of bring that out of him was really, really nice.
It is. It's, if you think about, like, the books, I mean, if you think about how much dialogue there actually is between, like, Percy and everyone else and, like, sharing his feelings and stuff, it's all, like, internal. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Which is amazing, but it's just, it's weird to think about, you know, like, when you're changing it to a show.
Yeah. It's why I'm very curious. We were just telling Aryan the other day too that I can't wait to see what they do with the empathy link.
Yeah, I'm excited for that too. I was thinking about that
because, like, from then on Grover knows what Percy's feeling all the time.
I know, because he decides to leave it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. I don't know. I have some information on the books, like, about, like, what they're going to do. But it's so hard. Like, I have a little bit about, like, what's going to happen and stuff. And I keep wanting to say it, but I can't. Sorry if I'm giving, like, dry answers, but no, I keep thinking about the new stuff.
We'll sit and wonder. There was also a question we got on Twitter that was kind of related to this conversation, which was, were there any moments in the show that made you rethink your interpretation of a scene or a character, or just made you see a part of the books differently?
I mean, definitely that betrayal with Luke at the end. That really made me rethink some stuff. But also, there's a scene where I was like, oh, I definitely got it right. Like, I got my interpretation of the character is perfect. It was when, at the end, the very end of episode 8, where I'm talking to Chiron and Mr. D shows up and he gets my name wrong again. But as he's walking away, there's this kid on the bench, like, packing his stuff up. And me and Glenn were supposed to just, like, stare at each other for the scene. But Jason started, like, improvising, and he walked over. And he started, like, screaming at the kid, like, what are you still doing here? You need to go. You need to get out of here. And, like, screaming at him. And so we just started laughing, which I hope, that's another blooper I hope they show. But I was like, they got Dionysus perfect.
Yeah, they definitely did.
Yeah, it was so funny how human the gods felt in the TV show to me. Like, I feel like they kind of almost ramp it up, too. I feel like there's a couple moments with Ares, but I felt like Hermes was the first one where I was like, oh, right, these are gods, sort of, as a viewer watching, where you kind of think about how powerful these characters actually are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I mean, I remember we had this giant, like, not, I mean, kind of table read on the first day that Lance and Toby showed up. And we just, like, sat down and just talked about all of them for, like, an hour before we started working. And just talked about the different, like, parts of gods and how they operate. And it's interesting. I like that. I like the way that they're written. They're very human in the way that they all have a large ego, is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. Which is very human-like, I think. Which is interesting, like, considering this version of Poseidon, I think. It's more of an internal thing, you know? Because every time you think of Poseidon from mythology, he's always killing somebody or, like, flipping boats and killing people in the ocean.
Yeah.
But you don't get that, like, vibe from this one. It's more of, like, I don't know, it's like an ancient power or something. I don't know. It's cool.
Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like the show has spent some time kind of showing the dichotomy between humans and gods in that, like, or at least between Percy and Annabeth and Grover and the gods, because you have, you know, the three of them together, they have, like, empathy, compassion, willingness to sacrifice for the people you love. While over and over we hear in the Olympian family that the, like, the betrayal going after glory and power, and that's the way the family is. But then there's also these characters who kind of are between them, like Hephaestus, and, you know, like, we get some of the gods who act more, you know, human in that way, and we also get, like, Luke, who's a little bit too much like his family.
Yeah.
And so I've been enjoying watching the way that that human and god relationship has been built.
Me too. Yeah.
So we have one more question that we actually have from our Patreon. Shout out to Mason. We basically want to start getting even deep, talking a little bit more about the books after this. But I thought he had a great question, which was, were there any moments during maybe the casting process or the shooting process where you really felt like the chemistry between you and Leah and Aryan, or just like any other of the actors, really bursting through and really felt like, yeah, this is it?
I think it was that scene in Camp Half-Blood in the Capture the Flag fight with Clarice, with like Dior. That was, I mean, I've said this before, but I was really scared. That was, I wasn't acting there. That was terrifying. But yeah, it just felt like, as I was doing that, I was like, oh, so this is what it's like. You know what I mean? For Percy, you know, it just felt so real. I wasn't thinking about, like, acting. I was just thinking about, I hope she doesn't kill me or something like that.
We saw the Capture the Flag clip at Comic-Con, and that was clip. That was my favorite of the three we saw by far, because it just felt so cool to see it all, like, everything, like, in the world at Camp Half-Blood really come together. And I loved how funny it was, but also how great the action was, and just felt like the perfect, like, yeah, that's Percy Jackson. You did it. Also, the scene with the lizard. So good.
Oh, the lizard. They had a real, like, lizard wrangler and everything. They brought, like, a huge one in and then a little one. I don't know if I would have done the scene if they had the huge one. But, yeah. And also, like, the peeing scene. Oh, my God. And the flossing.
How much of that came from you, and how much of that was it just sort of like, all right, what would Percy do when he's sitting in the woods? Or was that more of a choreographed situation?
So it was kind of written out. I mean, the flossing part was literally written in the script to do. And as I was reading, I was like, really? I mean, it came out. It works. You know what I mean? I like it. It works for the character. But as I was reading it, I was like, this is coming out in 2024. But no, I think it works perfectly. I think it fits in perfectly. He would do that, which is so funny.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I think you really made it work because it was just great, that whole sequence.
Thank you.
Okay, shall we talk books?
Let's do it.
Yeah, because we heard, so Daphne Olive recently guested on the newest Olympian podcast, and she mentioned that apparently you would ask a lot of people working on the show to rank the Percy Jackson books.
I did. I did ask people that a lot. It's weird. It was so long ago. I don't remember things.
No, I think it's great. You gotta see where people are at. You know, you have to figure out like what they're a fan of. So as they're answering it, right? Like, what are sort of the things you learn about them? Like take us through the process of, you know, analyzing their responses.
Well, I remember Leah said 4, and I like 4. I love 4. It's one of my favorites. But I mean, my favorite's 5. It's the best, I think. And also, it's hard to rank these books. I think they're all like perfect in their own way, you know. Mm-hmm. But my personal favorite's 5. But I didn't ask her, but I was like, she definitely just wants to do those like Rachel Elizabeth Dare. their beef. I think that's gonna be pretty funny.
Yeah. But
I mean, who else? Aryan said 5 too, and yeah, that's, come on, 5 is just like the coolest book ever, I think.
I have to tell you, 5 is like 3rd on the list for me.
What?
Oh.
I mean, I'm not mad. I'm just confused.
I was going to offer myself up as a guinea pig, too. My favorite's 4. I think there's something about that book where every scene is just banger, nonstop. You know, it all just works really well.
I can understand that. I can totally understand that. What's your second favorite?
It's Titan's Curse.
I love that book. This is how my ranking goes. 5, 3, 4, 1, and 2.
So why Titan's Curse over Battle of the Labyrinth for you?
It feels so, like, adult. You know what I mean? I don't want to compare it to, like, the Harry Potter books, but you know, like, the switch between Chamber of Secrets to Prisoner of Azkaban? Mm. Like, at least movie-wise? Mm-hmm. I feel like it's that kind of, like, shift in vibe. Mm. You know? It's, like, it's the winter. Like, the stakes are the highest, for Percy at least, because Annabeth is gone, which I think is, like, you know, it's definitely a lot more important than the other quests are to Percy. Actually, it's kind of tied with 1, getting his mom back. That's important, too. But, yeah, it's just, it feels so, like, fresh, and it's just, like, different and new, and everyone feels older.
Yeah. We talked a lot about that when we analyzed the Titan's Curse, the tone shift, because it's just... You can feel them getting older. I think also because Nico shows up and he's, you know, so much younger than them.
Yeah. And Percy's like, wow, that reminds me of me when I was your age, like especially to capture the flag and stuff.
Yeah. And I love the kind of like the end betrayal is almost like a reverse of like basically what happened to Percy at the end of The Lightning Thief. But Percy's in the Luke role in that like Nico feels like he's being betrayed by this older character. You can feel them getting older because they're playing new roles in the story.
That's a good way to put it.
And also kids are dying. Kids are dying around them for the first time.
Beyonce gets crushed to death, basically. Mm-hmm. Or no, electrocuted to death. That's worse.
Right.
Zoe Nightshade gets basically punched to death by her dad. Yeah. Also with a dragon poison. And also, like that final, that's going to be so awesome to do, like lifting up the sky.
Oh, yeah, the hole in the sky.
In the sky.
Oh, right. And also the gray streaks. Are you ready to dye your hair gray for several years?
I am ready to do that. But yeah, I mean, again, it's like, and also 4 also has that same kind of effect, especially at the end of 4. Mm-hmm. The end of 4 is like, because I mean, in Titan's Curse, people die throughout it, but with 4, nobody really dies. I mean, Pan dies, but like, he doesn't really die. He just kind of moves on. Mm-hmm. It's just something about the switch from like that, like kind of fun adventure. I mean, it's not fun. Again, it's like risky. People might die. But then coming out to Camp Half-Blood and like watching their home get like destroyed and watching their friends just like get skewered and die, like, right off the bat, it's just, like, terrifying, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that sets it up perfectly for 5 in the beginning, and Charles Beckendorf dying.
Yeah, yeah. That's, like, an immediate, this is what this book is about to be. Like, strap in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, did you have any, like, from the books, thinking about the books, any favorite plot lines or character arcs that you enjoy following through all of them?
I mean, Nico's obviously a big one. He's, like, one of my favorite characters. I think Daedalus is going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I wonder what actor they're going to pick to play Daedalus. Such an interesting character. Who else? There's so many people. Zoe Nightshade? Thalia?
Thalia. I'm so curious to see what they do with Thalia, especially next season.
I'm curious, too. Yeah. I hope it's, like, part of me wants to be selfish and, like, try to get all my friends to cast. Like, Momo and everyone to get them all on the show.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm curious to see how, like, their characters are going to work out with the story and stuff. And I kind of like how season 3, it's almost like Thalia and Percy are kind of fighting for, like, who's next up after Annabeth.
It's like they're fighting over who's the main character. Like,
they're fighting over, like, who Annabeth picks.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Or who gets to have Annabeth, I guess. And Thalia showing up, it's just such an interesting, like, thing to put on Percy for that season. It's just, it kind of, like, Percy's working his way up the food chain at Camp Half-Blood, like, from 1 and 2, and then he gets, like, near the top, and then Thalia shows up and immediately, like, bumps him way back down.
Mm.
You know? And I think that's going to be interesting to shoot. And, like, that scene where she does, like, the snap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, she's like, oh, Chiron didn't teach you that? And he's like, wait, are you more important than me to everyone?
Yeah. Especially because, like, she never actually made it to get, like, she's been there for, you know, a couple months at this point, and Chiron has already taught her that.
All of this stuff. And also, like, I keep thinking of, I know it sounds weird, but, like, banter, like, back and forth and stuff. I keep thinking of a bunch of, like, tree puns I could use on her and stuff like that, like the pine cone line.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't he call her, like, pine cone face or something in the book?
He does.
I think so. Yeah.
Or the isn't that in the scene? Maybe it's not, but I love that one scene where they're fighting during Capture the Flag.
Mm. Yeah, that, oh, I always think about that.
It's such a good moment.
And it just shows Percy's fatal flaw. I think that scene especially, like, loyalty to the person. I think that's, like, that's his fatal flaw, right?
Athena says that it's personal loyalty, like, that you would destroy the world to save a friend, is what she says. But I can't remember if in that scene that's what sparks, like, it.
What's not what he remember? He, because she's about to get beaten by the Huntress, and he goes and saves her.
Is that what happens?
I'm pretty sure. Let's search this up. Actually, I'm gonna be embarrassed if I don't get this right.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think he's, like, going to save Thalia, and then she gets really mad at him for, like, stepping in.
He left his post, and they win.
Oh, yeah.
And that just shows, like, the difference between them. You know, Percy's willing to lose if he can save someone, and she's not willing to do that. And I think that shows the difference between Poseidon and Zeus in the books, I guess. I mean, I guess it doesn't really show them, but through their kids, it shows their differences, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, totally.
Do we ever in the books learn what Thalia's fatal flaw is?
I was just thinking about that. I don't think we do.
What do we think it is?
I don't know. Getting turned into a pine tree, maybe? That might be one. What is a fatal flaw? If we had to make a fatal flaw, now I'm the interviewer. If you had to make Thalia have a fatal flaw, which fatal flaw would you make her have?
I'm thinking about, so in one of our conversations with Daphne Olive, she talked about how fatal flaws to her are, like, your greatest strength and your greatest weakness, which I really like as an approach.
Mm-hmm. I 100% agree with that.
What do we think Thalia's greatest strength is, Phoebe?
We've seen what got her killed already, so her fatal flaw should be in that scene.
Yeah, like, willing to sacrifice your life for people you love, maybe.
I'm going to throw something out there.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with, like independence almost. Like, she really wants to, like, be her own person and, like, only rely, like, self-reliance, basically.
Mm. That's a good one.
I could see, and not wanting to join the Hunters.
Yeah, but I feel like she joins as a lieutenant, right? Like, she doesn't join to be a part of a group. She joins to, like, get regain control, right, of her fate instead of being the prophecy king.
Yeah.
She always has to be in control.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Or maybe she has the same fatal flaw as Percy.
I mean, yeah, because Annabeth says that, like, Percy and Thalia are so alike that, like, she doesn't know if they would kill each other or if they would be best friends.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's going to be interesting to film, too. I hope that, like, we do some scenes where we're just, like, best friends, and then some where we're, like, hate each other. I don't know. Just, like, a good even mix.
Mm. Yeah. There's that one very small scene in The Titan's Curse that I love. The car, yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. I love seeing them just, like, bond for a second, and then by the end of the scene, Thalia being like, get out of my car.
That's going to be pretty funny to film. And also Apollo. Apollo's in that book.
Yeah. Apollo is in that book.
I'm excited to see who they cast for him.
Yeah.
I mentioned Sam Claflin. Mm. Hopefully that happens.
Mm-hmm. That's a good choice.
I saw like a fan cast that one time. I was like, that's perfect.
Yeah.
I kind of think of him as more of like a Ken. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I think of like Artemis more like, if this makes any sense, they kind of have the same dynamic that Percy and Thalia have in a way that like they're similar, but and Apollo doesn't care, but I think Artemis hates it. So that might be interesting. And I'm just like, I hope that he's like a Ken. If they get Ryan Gosling, that'd be great. But I can imagine him just like doing haikus and stuff.
Mm. I really like that though, the like Artemis Apollo dynamic being like the Percy Thalia dynamic. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot of the like, we love each other, we're kind of the same person, but also there's just something in there that just makes us clash that we cannot get around.
It just doesn't work. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I really like that.
While we're talking about the books, I do want to talk a little bit about Heroes of Olympus, even though you said that you maybe don't remember it very well.
I remember a good bunch, though.
Okay.
I'm ready.
I think I heard that you were rereading them at some point. Are you rereading them?
I am rereading them, but I've taken a quick detour. I'm rereading Sea of Monsters now.
Makes sense.
I'm on Lost Hero. Which I keep thinking about. It's going to be, if we do it, it's going to be so weird because I'm not, like,
oh, yeah.
in it. I know I don't want to sound like full of myself, but, like, that's just such a weird thought, you know?
Yeah.
You'll be felt, though. You'll be missed, I'm sure.
I hope so. I hope people will miss me.
I feel like Percy sort of hangs over that whole, kind of like the way Thalia hangs over Lightning Thief. Like, Percy kind of hangs over that whole book where it's like, where is he?
None of the characters know who he is, so he is kind of like a ghost in the way that Thalia is. That's true. Mm-hmm. I never thought about it like that.
But not even like, I mean, it's different because the main people on the quest, like, at least with like Annabeth and Thalia, Annabeth knows, she was on the quest, and like, Annabeth was best friends with Thalia, she knows all about her, but like, Percy's this random dude that none of them know, and they get to this like random Camp Half-Blood world, and apparently they're demigods, and they have to go on this big quest, and it's just, it's kind of funny. It's funny how things repeat themselves. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's just like the way it works. And every time the characters find a way to kind of like break themselves out of it in some type of way, you know?
Yeah.
That's something we talk about a lot. It's how it's interesting how like they're repeating myths in a way, but then they're also sort of, by the time you hit Heroes of Olympus especially, it's like they're the myths. And then they're kind of like, they're sort of like finding all the other ways to kind of play out those same stories, which I think is a really interesting part of that series.
Yeah.
Have you read the short stories?
I don't think so. They're short stories?
It's the Demigod Files and the Demigod Diaries.
Oh, I read Demigod Diaries.
Okay.
So I must have read the short stories.
Because in the Demigod Diaries, there's that one short story where they're like on what used to be the battlefield in like Battle of the Labyrinth. And they just like, it's almost a legend at this point. Like they keep hearing stories about, oh, you don't want to go over here because that's, you know, where something happened.
It's like cursed.
Yeah, it's cool to see the stories that happened in the first series turn into myths in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Since we are coming up on time, one last question for you. So at the end of each of our episodes, we like to design whatever book or episode that we just watched at the end of the summer, a bead, like they do at Camp Half-Blood.
Oh, that's sick.
So if the bead for season one of Percy Jackson and the Olympians couldn't be a trident, what would you put on it to symbolize this season? And it doesn't have to be a symbol of, like, the full journey or the full season, if you want. It can also be just a symbol of, like, a moment or a story that really stood out to you.
That's a good question. Maybe a Minotaur in underpants?
Yeah.
Or maybe just, like, I know this is, like, weird, but maybe a gold bead, just, like, a shiny gold bead for Ares' blood.
Ooh. Okay, yeah. I thought you were going to say, like, goldish, like bronze on one side, and then like
the steel on the other.
Celestial
bronze and steel, like Backbiter. I don't know. That's a good question. That's a really good. You guys have had such good questions, by the way.
I have Thank to say you. That.
The winged shoes, maybe.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I think I actually picked Backbiter for mine.
You did pick Backbiter, yeah.
That's awesome.
I love all the different metals and the lore. That's the other thing I kind of do is I'd like to keep track of it and just be like, all right, how is this all working together? Like,
it's kind of a scary thought to think about, mm-hmm. like with Backbiter. Mm-hmm. Like, it's half celestial bronze to kill monsters and half steel to kill humans.
Yeah, I was like...
That's a weird...
When I was watching it in the show, I was like, no wonder they didn't have him explain it in this scene, because you lose all sympathy as soon as you're like, I also made this sword to kill people with.
Yeah, that was a little bit terrifying in the books.
Like, it definitely works in the books, but...
Yeah. When I first read the book, I remember that was the moment when I first read it when I was like 12 or 13, that was the moment I was like, oh, wait a minute. That was the moment I was like, uh-oh.
I think Luke might be a bad guy. That sounds.
I think Luke might be a bad guy.
He might be a villain.
Maybe.
That scene in Titan's Curse when he uses the sword, he uses Riptide, and it goes right through a bunch of mortals. I think that's when he meets Rachel Elizabeth Dare, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she sees it.
Yeah, and I always think about that, and then I think about Backbiter's existence, and I'm like, wow,
wild that it's he made weird. That.
Yeah. Real quickly, I was just gonna say, like, at school, it's weird because we were just talking about the Hoover Dam today, and I always, like, I can't stop thinking about, I don't know, it's just, every time I hear, and I love how, like, it kind of takes place, like, the Percy Jackson books, we're in, like, different kind of, like, national monuments in every book, at least, like, one different one. I mean, technically, season two with Bermuda Triangle. And again, I'm taking this class in my school called Harry Potter, and what we do is... We go over, like, we read all the books and we watch the movies. And a lot of what we talk about is the hero's quest and, like, the trio and all that kind of stuff. And so it's weird to, like, talk about that, you know?
Yeah. You're just sitting there thinking about Percy Jackson instead.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because those are, I mean, I feel like Percy Jackson and Harry Potter, those are sort of, like, our hero's journeys. Those are our, like, huge touchstones that we think of now. Like, even, like, you know, because Phoebe and I, we're a bit older than you, but we still, like, these are the books we grew up with. This is sort of, like, you know, this is what we think about when we think about Greek mythology. Like, you talk to most people now and they're like, oh, I don't know that much about Greek mythology, but I read Percy Jackson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I used to think I was a Greek mythology expert. When I was really little, we took a trip. It was like for a couple days, and we went on this giant vacation, and we went to the Louvre in France. I would appreciate that a lot more now, I think. But then I was just kind of pissed off that we were going to France to go to a museum. But as soon as I heard there was a Greek mythology section, I immediately started like trying to tell everyone like which statues were who and which person was who. They look a lot different than how they're described in Percy Jackson. So.
That's kind of the cool thing, though. You sort of, it's cool that you can like recognize them still. Like you can look at a statue and be like, oh, that's Dionysus. So I guess I'll ask one last fun question, just because now I'm curious. Do you have any go-to Percy Jackson trivia questions you ask people?
That's a good question. I mean, I haven't really had like a completely in-depth conversation about Percy Jackson with a lot of people. But I mean, normally if someone says they're like a fan, I always just ask them what their favorite book is and talk about their favorite book. But I guess my go-to question would be something like, what does Nico feed the dead? Or, you know what I mean? Someone random like that. Or the second year, or the first year, what was the camp beat? Or something like that.
Yeah.
What's you guys's?
It depends on like how hard I want to make it. But one of my favorite things, and I'll stick with like Sea of Monsters maybe, but mine would be, what language does Cersei sing in?
Ancient Greek?
No, it's actually not ancient Greek.
What is it? I'm interested now.
It's Minoan, which is the language of the Cretan people they had before the people we know of as the ancient Greeks came in.
I've never heard that. I mean, I've probably read it at some point. Is it like said in the books?
Well, it's sort of like Percy's narrating and he's like, she was singing in some language that sounded like Greek but wasn't. Minoan maybe? And I was like, Percy, you recognize Minoan?
Of course, he's a smart kid.
Yeah.
Yes. Son of Sally Jackson.
Yeah. Sally Jackson also learned Minoan. I think that's got to be canon now.
That's canon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing I hope that we do get at some point is talking ancient Greek. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. Getting a scene like Poseidon and Zeus had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are fun for me because I actually took Greek in college. So I was sort of like, ooh.
You took Greek in college? That's awesome.
Yeah, that is unfortunately Rick Riordan's fault.
The heck, Rick.
No, it's really great. It's a really cool language. I would highly recommend it if you ever get the chance. It's really fun to read stuff in the original language.
That sounds... I know Patros.
Yes, you do.
That's it. That's my ancient Greek.
Don't we also know, like, eat my pants or whatever Percy yells?
Eat my short? Yeah.
What's Eres kakoros or something is what Annabeth says, like, eat crow or something.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. There's, like, random ones.
That was, like, dude, every time I hear something, I'm like, or from Percy Jackson, or even if it's, like, a little sentence, that it, like, sounds kind of familiar, and I know it's from Percy Jackson, I, like, can't stop thinking about it. I'm going to think about that all day. What book that's from, because I know exactly what you're talking about. Is that Clarice? Did she say that to Clarice?
Who? Maybe it is. I don't know. We'll just have to reread them again. Oh, yeah. Well. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Well, we are at time. So thank you so much for joining us, Walker. This was a great time.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm sorry I couldn't give two in-depth responses today.
We'll just have to have you back after season 2 comes out, and then we can get into it.
I'll be back.
Thank you all for listening to Monster Donut. Thank you, Walker, for joining us.
If you want to get a sneak peek to who we may or may not be interviewing and also submit questions for those people, you can always sign up for our Patreon where you'll get access to some of that information ahead of time. Also, our episodes ahead of time, a bunch of other bonus episodes and content, and much, much more as we continue.
With that said, thank you to our patrons, RK, Winda Wells, Emily Ann Bonnie, Roman Consul, Latino Kaya, Patty VCK, Bethany from Public Works, Sydney Fox, Joke, Reina Avila Ramirez Arellano, Charlie McNeil, Bronte Lebo, Chief and Plays, Robert Gamer, Kels, Kari, Layla Hussein, Mason Bowman, Casey Cassidy, Evelyn Zamudio, Kelsey Young, Vizzy Cat, Nikki Feldbaum, Abby Gray, and Melanie Valdez. Thank you all very much.
If you want to find the links to our Patreon or any other information about us, you can find us at PJOPod on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. You'll also find on our Instagram and Twitter our link tree that will take you to all of our social media and also our merch shop where you can pick up some great shirts designed by Phoebe. You can also find Phoebe's art there, and it's great. 10 out of 10 would recommend. Also, if you want to give us a rating or review, that also really helps us out, and we love to hear any feedback you might have about the show. You can also respond on Spotify to specific episodes. You can also leave your wrap-up questions at any of those social medias. You can add us or DM us or respond on Spotify, or you can email us at monsterdonutpodcast@gmail.com.
Is that it?
I think that's it. Do you have a bead for these interviews, Phoebe?
Ooh. My bead is the little Zoom recording icon. And when you press it, there's like, they've built into the bead the voice of the lady saying that Zoom is now recording.
Oh my god. The terrifying voice. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
Bye.